The following episode originally aired in 2005.
Hello, I'm Marian McPartland. My guest today is Andrew Hill, a pianist and composer of extraordinary talent. His spare and angular style and his rhythmic and melodic concepts are his alone. His harmonic ideas fall into the same pattern of quiet brilliance. All in all, a thought-provoking glance into the avant-garde. It's great to have you on the show. Thank you for coming.
It's an honor to be included.
I've been listening to your music, and I certainly have a lot to learn. Boy, different people have different ways of putting a chord together or a melody. The way you do things is quite extraordinary, as I said, very unusual. So I'm really looking forward to hearing you playing this tune, Nicodemus. That's a great title. I love it.
This was one of my forays into 5/4.
A foray into 5/4.
Because it was named after a town that used to exist in Ohio called Nicodemus. It's a long history to it. So I heard the story, and you know, sometimes you write these compositions and don't have titles for it. So I say, well, that's a good title for it, Nicodemus.
That's a wonderful title. Well, I'm going to sit quiet and listen very carefully. Now, that's what I find interesting. It's Nicodemus. Mm-hmm. And you went through a lot of different key changes, didn't you?
Two or three.
And it ended in F.
In F minor.
F minor.
And it started on an F7 with an augmented 11.
You know, I'm so bad at calling chords.
So am I, but it's terrible. People used to question me so much that I had to think of a name for everything, even though I may not feel the name. But this F7 really reminded me of an opportunity to play in two keys at once, because you have the A flat and you have the F.
You have an F7th, and then you play in two keys at once.
Because you... Mm-hmm. And then you have B flat. Then you have E flat also.
I never thought of it that way. So, how about another tune?
Okay.
So, what's this tune called?
It's called Blue Black. It was a saying in the 60s and 70s that the only true black person was the blue person. Because if you would go back to Africa, which was say unmutated and evolved, look more blue than they look black, you know, because, you know, we have such color for racial, you know, connotations. That
different grades of color.
Different grades of color that none of it really mean anything. That's why.
But you can put it all into music.
But you can put it all into music as a color.
Pretty strange. Okay, I'm listening. Black is a really interesting title for that tune because it goes everywhere. It goes into different colors, key-wise, different keys, and it's very aptly titled, I would say.
Well, that's really almost the joke about it. It's called Blue Black based upon original black men, etc. But it's inclusive of all the races because, like you said, it has something from every various color thrown into it and projected. So that's why I call it blue-black. Not that it's just representative of one culture, but it's representative of all the cultures.
I'm in that thing, too.
Yeah, you are.
Well, I was wondering, when you got started playing, were you just a little kid in Chicago?
Yeah, when I started playing, jazz was, you know, like a popular music. I remember going to the Blue Note, I think, as a kid, to hear you and your husband, Jimmy.
You did?
Yes.
No kidding.
Yeah, because they could sneak us in on Sundays. Due to my father, I could sneak into certain places as a kid and just stay out the way. But I could participate if I could become invisible, in a sense.
Well, did your father play piano? Did he get you started?
No, he loved music. I just started because it was so much music around, you know, like they had the Regal Theater at that time.
Oh, sure.
Where they had the stage shows and everything, and down the street from that was the Savoy Ballroom, and then right. The Hurricane Lounge. Where
absolutely.
You know, so one could really just get this encyclopedia of knowledge from all these beautiful people playing so differently.
I can imagine how that was, because Jimmy and I, when we were finished at the Brass Rail, we would go out to the South Side to hear Charlie Ventura and Jackie and Roy, and we also went to hear Red Saunders.
At the Club de Lisa?
The Club de Lisa, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Gee, you're reminding me of all our old haunts from years ago.
You reminded me of my childhood.
Yeah, but you met Earl Hines. Was he like your first teacher, or did he?
He was really, in a sense, my first teacher, because I hadn't, you know, taken lessons prior, but as fate would have it, he had a suite in a place on Oakwood Boulevard called the New Grand Terrace Hotel and Ballroom.
Oh, goodness.
You know, I was real young, so they let me have a paper out, even though I couldn't carry all the papers that most paper boys had. You know, they had 200 or 300 pounds. I was satisfied with my 25 pounds.
About how old were you then?
11, 12. I was satisfied with that, because that would give me the change that I wanted to go and listen to these various sites, Southside, because all the places used to have these sophisticated sound systems, you know, where you could just stay outside and hear the music. So anyway, so I found ways of disturbing Mr. Hands in the morning that he came to the door one morning to speak his mind in a nice way, and I was able to get his attention for a moment, and then we started building a relationship.
That's great, because he was a great player. He thought a lot of you. He saw that you had great talent, didn't he?
Well, it would be kind of self-serving for me to say, oh, he saw that I had this incredible talent, but I'm really appreciative of the fact that he was a kind and considerate person.
Well, then later you got to study with Bill Russo?
Yeah, I got to study with Bill. He was performing with Stan Kenton. He had just come back in town, and he was giving music lessons. So I paid for a series and studied a little bit with him.
Actually, what I would love to do is for us to play a duet together. And do you think we could do something like A Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square?
Oh, that's one of my favorite compositions.
Well, let's do it. We don't have to rehearse it. We'll just play it.
Mm-hmm.
I think we sound good together.
Oh, you sounded great. I was just trying to keep up with you. You were hot.
That's such a nice tune.
It's a beautiful tune.
I'm glad you like it, because it's funny. That goes back to, I guess it was very popular in World War II, and a lot of English singers. That's where I learned it, I guess, off the BBC.
That's what they say. It was very popular in England during the war.
I'm not sure if I've got the right title for this tune, Andrew, but it was something that you did on a record that was a piano solo. It might have been Tough Love, but in any case, it was a beautiful tune.
Well, I have this tune in mind. I don't remember Tough Love exactly, but maybe this will come close to what you heard.
To hear the full Piano Jazz broadcast, tune in next week to your NPR station, or stream the program online at pianojazz.npr.org. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina Public Radio.